Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Appreciate you listening to American Family Radio. I'm Tim Wildman. We're going to be here for the next hour and a half, bringing you up to speed with what's happening in our country and in our world. As far as the news goes, Ed Battagliano joining me. Good morning, Ed.
Good morning, Tim.
Walker Wildman. Good morning, Walker.
Good morning. Good to be here today.
All right, Walker, what's happening on the World Wide Web with this show?
Yeah, a couple things going on related to the show. First thing, we're live streaming on Facebook, so you can watch the radio show on Facebook. You can also watch on YouTube. Just go and type in Today's Issues, both of those places. Another thing we're doing is each day I post the news articles we talk about on our Facebook page. So if you want to read farther into the news articles, many of them from onenewsnow.com, then you can do that there.
Okay, so check us out on Facebook or YouTube. You can watch the show live. We're live video streaming, so you can see the color shirts that we're wearing. That doesn't make any difference in the grand scheme of life, but
in the minor scheme of life, it could.
Mm. Mm-hmm. True.
That was deep.
Yeah.
True. Yeah, that was. I'm going to ponder on that. Fred Jackson, news director for American Family Radio News, is with us today. Good morning, Fred.
Feeling very green.
Yeah.
Yes.
Green on this side of the table.
Very environmentalist friendly. And then we get to Walker.
Walker didn't get the memo.
I'm a pessimist. So.
Walker's wearing blue. So
I like
we're
to be
green.
Different.
We've got different shades of green going on here, and Walker's bringing us down with his blue, his blue shirt. Walker's got the polo thing going on over there, though.
Yeah. Yeah.
Christmas.
The horse.
Christmas.
You know, that little man riding the polo horse, that says when you're out in public, I'm wearing a shirt that's superior to yours. doesn't that say that to, am I the only one that says that? And I do have my share. I have a couple of polo shirts, too, when I want to feel, you know, better than other people out there who buy the off-brand with the,
Well, when you're in high school and
the
college,
the foxes and the little hens,
yeah, the alligators,
and you walk up with your horse. Man on the horse playing polo, and you're looking down at that person.
Now, the only time I've ever heard your dad say something about the polo is when it's on your shirt.
Yeah,
when it's on his shirt, I don't hear that. I don't hear that kind of stuff.
I got the Under Armour free ad here thing going on.
Under Armour might be more expensive than the polo.
Here's what's happened over the years.
Yeah, what's happened?
The last few years, as you start to get on your own, buy your own clothes, etc., you shift away from the polo and the name brand.
Right.
So everything you have that's name brand is either from Christmas or from high school.
Yeah,
and then you start buying the TJ Maxx off-brand shirts.
When it isn't a gift or your parents don't buy it for you anymore.
Yeah.
Well, the
horse doesn't matter so much.
Just to add to that, my daughter, when she was in high school, junior high school, she started working when she was 15. She got herself a job. But when she was in junior high in early years, she would want all the name brands stuff.
Yeah,
and we wouldn't. We wouldn't get them.
Right.
So, well, we just can't afford that, you know. And so when she got a job, I said, now you're going to start buying your own clothes.
Yeah.
And she said, Walmart's fine with me.
when she was paying for it.
All she said, well, Walmart's fine. I can get bulk.
Well, my shirt is last night's pizza.
You do got something nice going on there. What is that?
I don't know what that is.
That's chaps.
Chaps
thing going
on
here.
There you go.
All right,
Fred, what's happening out there?
Well, you know, when you go to a hockey game or a baseball game,
right?
You have to have a program to kind of understand who the players are.
Right.
So our first story today is going to be a little bit confusing if you follow politics over the last 10 or 15 years, because the players are going to be somewhat familiar, but they kind of switch teams.
Yeah.
All right. So all of that in advance. Lanny Davis is the former chief counsel for President Bill Clinton. He is now the lawyer representing Michael Cohen, who once was the lawyer representing Donald Trump. All right?
Mm-hmm. So I'm following you so far.
All right. So yesterday afternoon, Lanny Davis went to his friends at CNN and said, I have a tape of a conversation between lawyer Michael Cohen and his then-client Donald Trump. This conversation took place in September 2016, 2 months before the election. In the conversation, they talk about Ms. McDougal, who said she had an affair with Donald Trump some previous time.
10 years before or something?
10 years yeah. before. And they're talking about paying a sum to basically buy that story, which I think the National Enquirer had at the time. So so we're going to listen to what you're going to hear first is a little bit of this tape between Michael Cohen and his client, Donald Trump, who didn't know Michael Cohen was recording the conversation.
Right.
And then we're going to hear the present lawyer for Donald Trump, Rudy Giuliani, former mayor of New York, explaining a little bit about that tape. He was interviewed by Fox News last night. So is that kind of set the table?
I got the program.
Where we're going?
I can see who's who.
All right. So first voice you're going to hear, Cohen and Donald Trump, September 2016.
And I spoke to Alan about it when it comes time for the financing, which will be...
Listen, what financing?
We'll have to pay you. So
I'll pay the
no, 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 no. I got... No.
The major point is it's outrageous that someone would tape his client. President Trump says, quote, don't pay with cash. Cohen then interrupts and says, no, I got it. And then you hear distinctly, if you're careful and you slow it down, check. And then Cohen follows with no, and then quickly cuts off the tape.
All right. So according to Rudy Giuliani, this conversation is taking place. Cohen, according to Giuliani, Cohen, the lawyer for Trump at the time, wanted to pay out this in cash. He is saying Donald Trump said no, check. Giuliani's point in all of that is that Donald Trump is not trying to hide anything. He wants a record of payment. Therefore, we're going to do it
paying
by check.
For what?
Well, for the story to be squashed. So what you do is you pay for the story to be squashed, and then the woman who's claiming to have had an affair with President. So President Trump is 2 months away from the election. This Susan McDougal, she comes forward to the National.
Susan McDougal is a Whitewater lady, wasn't she?
There was a McDougal. This is a different McDougal, though,
different.
Right?
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So she's claiming to have an affair, and
the Playboy playmate.
She's going to whatever. Let the world know 2 months before the election, and so Donald Trump says, "What does she want? Basically, buy her silence, you know, and she'll have to sign a non-disclosure agreement because we've got the election coming up."
By the way, the president said that the affair didn't take place.
Yes, he's denying that the affair took place. But it would be a damn. Then you're talking about whether this woman's telling the truth
for
the last 2 months. You're
going to pay somebody off for something that didn't happen?
Well, because by the time you prove it didn't happen, the election's over.
I don't believe that. I believe he had an affair. Do you believe that?
Well, the way the media...
I've never had an affair. I don't know what I
mean. I ain't buying that. I love President Trump, most of what he's doing, but yeah. I ain't buying that.
Well, I don't doubt that he's had affairs, but the thing is, what Ed's getting to is, the way the media works, you're guilty. You're guilty. You run the story, and the politician's done for. And it doesn't matter whether they're innocent or not, and that's why a lot of people...
Walker, in today's world, you're not done for. Not for adultery.
Well, in any case...
Okay, the point is whether he did or he didn't have an affair, the point is that he's paying this woman money. That's why I don't think you pay. Anyway, I know I'm getting off track here. I don't think you pay a woman money, hush money, if you didn't have an affair with her. I'd say, who is this woman? I don't even know who she is. I'm not paying her a dime.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? You see my point?
I do. I do see your point. The reason this is a story, though, I think, because most people who don't like President Trump already think he's a philanderer and an adulterer and has said nasty things about women.
He never hid a lot of
that. He never hid that. But the question is, did he use campaign money in violation of the Federal Election Commission rules and regulations to pay off a woman?
There's no evidence of that. And we have to remind people, during the election campaign, President Trump was dumping millions of his own money into his campaign.
Right.
The payoff was apparently $150,000, which in Donald Trump's billionaire world is peanuts. So to make an allegation that they use why would they use campaign money? I mean,
is he wanting to pay off the National Enquirer, not to run the story? Is that what is going on here?
I don't know. There is a payment to the woman. I don't know if there's also a payment to National Enquirer.
According to the Associated Press story, the tape conversation between Trump and Cohen came weeks after the National Enquirer's parent company reached a $150,000 deal to pay McDougal for her story of a 2006 affair, which it never published, a tabloid practice known as catch and kill.
Yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm. They paid for the story and killed it.
Yes.
Okay. And now... now, we are going to have Abe on at the bottom of the hour to talk about what Michael Cohen did.
The ethics.
Without
his knowledge. New York is a one-party state, which means you can tape somebody without their knowledge. Okay, now you can't, in New York, you can't tape two other people having a conversation, but if you're a party to a conversation, only one person has to know, but... He's a lawyer.
He's your lawyer.
So can he be disbarred? We're going to ask Abe that question at 10:30.
Yeah, and I don't doubt that President Trump at some point had affairs within his life. I mean, that's who are we kidding here?
He was a New York billionaire playboy.
But I will say it's not uncommon for people and organizations and companies to settle lawsuits even when the company's innocent. When the person's innocent because of the public implications and the lengthy court fees. Some of these companies settle, somebody slips in the parking lot. Well, it was their own fault, but they sued the company. The company's, do I want to pay $1 million in court fees or do I want to pay $100,000 to the person?
Yeah, I understand.
So that it can happen to where the person's innocent.
Yeah, I understand.
I don't, from our perspective in our lives, especially as Christians, but it is inconceivable to most people that you pay somebody
when you're innocent. Exactly.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that.
That's what Bill O'Reilly claimed.
Yeah, right.
With a bunch of those women.
I didn't believe Bill O'Reilly.
And I'm just paying off to get them off my plate.
Yeah.
I'm going, well, if you're going to pay them off, pay the women off who are making false claims against you.
That won't stop.
Aren't you going to encourage more of them
Anyway,
just.
Exactly.
But the bottom line is that there's no evidence that the president did anything illegal based on that videotape we heard. And I think it's absolutely horrible that a lawyer would tape his client and not let him know, given the fact that a lawyer-client relationship is supposed to be
confidential.
Mm-hmm. I also had a problem with that. Was it the FBI? Who raided the offices?
Yeah, that was the FBI. Raided his office,
okay,
Michael Cohen's.
You raid the offices of an attorney and then take all his privileged communications with his clients? You can do that in America?
Well, I'm wondering now if Cohen didn't suggest to them and say, I have recordings. I can't give them to you, but if you raid my offices...
That's even lower.
Well, I know.
Yeah. That's a snake.
The Drudge has Cohen.
Can you get lower than the snake, friend?
The rat is what Drudge is calling him.
The rat. Wow. Anyway, it's just, quite frankly, you live a life style like those people do, and I'm talking about all of them, Democrats, Republicans, all of them, that New York playboy lifestyle. I guess you play girl, too, in today's world. Yeah. It's going to come back to get you in some way or another. But it just – now, the funny thing is watching the Democrats talk about this. When Bill Clinton had affairs in the White House, they cheered him. Yeah. Remember that pep rally they had?
It's just about sex. Wow, yeah, it's just about sex.
Now with Donald Trump, though, well, I thought it was just about sex, right? Yeah. Democrats, it didn't really matter.
And Lanny Davis was in both.
Yeah, I know.
The Clinton thing and now this.
Crazy, crazy world. You're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Tim with Ed, Walker, and Fred. Ann Reed, who is a writer with the American Family Association Journal, is with us now, and I saw an article by Ann about the movie Roe versus Wade. That's right, a film called Roe versus Wade is being produced, and I thought this is it sounded great, it sounded very encouraging. And Ann is in studio with us. Good morning, Ann.
Good morning, Tim. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. What is this? Tell us about this movie Roe versus Wade.
So the executive producer of the film is Alveda King, Martin Luther King Jr.'s niece, and the purpose of the film is to tell the real story that led up to the Roe v. Wade case that legalized abortion across the United States. A made-for-TV movie was made several years ago, but it did not really get to the truth of the back-alley manipulation that took place behind the scenes. In leading up to that case.
Okay, so Roe versus Wade, is this going to be a theatrical release?
Yes, they are hoping to have it released in theaters in the fall at about the same time that Judge Kavanaugh would be up for confirmation.
Now, did I read where the state of New York had banned the movie from filming there?
I don't know that it was necessarily the state of New York, but there were several locations that they did not receive approval to film in several of their key locations
because
they requested.
Because the people thought it would be a pro-life movie. The people trying to keep them from filming in New York thought it would be a pro-life movie.
Well, that's up for debate. Of course, those who have said that... that have refused them, and also a couple of LSU, Louisiana State University, and Tulane. Tulane gave them one day of taping, and then they kind of kicked them out, and LSU never approved it. So it's up for debate what the producers of the film are saying and what the different groups are saying as to the reason that they've denied them location for filming.
Go ahead.
Well, they've also had a couple of individuals who are working on the movie. When they found out that it was a pro-life movie, they quit.
Correct. Actually, more than a couple. Their director, their assistant director, an electrician. Once the electrician that was on set learned of the pro-life perspective coming through the film, and several actors. And it's unclear as to, especially with some of the actors, because you've got a couple of very conservative pro-life type actors, including Stephen Baldwin and a couple of others who left the film. But I think some of that has come from the secrecy of, for instance, they filmed under the name 1973 instead of the actual name of the film because the mainstream media is just coming and attacking the film to such a degree.
This is why I wanted to talk about it, because Roe versus Wade, it'll be out in the next 6 months to a year, I guess.
Within the next 6 months is their
okay.
plan.
The name of the movie is Roe versus Wade. It's being made, but it's being, the tolerant Hollywood crowd is trying to shut down this movie. That's my point. Go ahead,
right.
Fred. One more. You got a question for
me? Yeah, and one question. The aim of Alveda King is to correct some of the misconceptions. What are some of the misconceptions that are out there about Roe v. Wade?
That everything was on the up and up. Dr. Bernard Nathanson was probably the most prolific abortionist during that time in the 70s. He had done over 75,000 abortions. And so he was a key component of kind of bringing that to fruition. He and some of the attorneys, some of the feminists and things like that, and they did a lot of behind-the-scenes manipulation, things that they brought to the forefront in terms of how many back-alley abortions were being done, how many women were dying. They just made up numbers. And he came out later on in life once the ultrasound technology came to the forefront, and he you know, came to terms that, that he had murdered thousands and thousands of babies. And so he put the truth out there. So that's one of the key things that's going to come out through the film.
The Silent Scream, wasn't that the name of it?
With Dr. That was, wasn't that Dr. Nathanson's?
I remember that was very popular in the either the '80s or the '90s. It's called Silent Scream.
Yeah, that was an intense film about showing actual abortions taking place.
And it was Dr. Bernard Nathanson, the guy that Ann's talking about, the doctor who was a famous abortionist who became a pro-lifer.
That was his film.
He was the one that hosted that.
Yeah. Let me just ask you one other thing. Now, Norma McCorvey, who was Roe. Did I hear correctly that she wasn't even pregnant when this was unfolding in terms of the Supreme Court case?
Well, she was pregnant when they recruited her, but it took years for the case to play out. And by the time it had played out, it had been years, and she had actually set up an adoption plan for her child.
Okay.
So she didn't. She has never had an abortion.
Okay.
She died, by the way, last February.
Right.
Walker, the story that Ann wrote on this, have you got it on our website?
I do.
On our Facebook page or where?
I posted on our Facebook page. The article from AFA.net is titled Roe versus Wade, the Movie, the Truth, and the Battle.
I can't wait for the movie to come out and go see it. And Dr. Alveda King is a friend of ours. And so, Ann, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
It's Ann Reed, a writer for the AFA Journal, talking about the movie Roe versus Wade, which basically Hollywood's trying to shut down because of its pro-life. Well, it's just an accurate story about what happened in the case. That's all it is. It's nothing fictional about it. But because it takes a pro-life viewpoint, the tolerant cloud doesn't want to tolerate it. All right. You're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Dr. Robert Jeffress will be with us a little bit later on, by the way. And Abraham Hamilton III will be with us after the break. What else you got, Fred?
Well, I don't know if we have time before the break, but there's going
read
to
real
be...
fast, Fred.
We'll slow down the tape later.
Do your auctioneer voice.
It's going to be our
soul to the man in green.
Hey, I see that.
Canadians get accused of talking too fast, so we'll go to it. There's going to be a very, very, very interesting governor's race in Georgia this fall, folks. You got to watch it. Last night, the Republican Secretary of State for the state, Brian Kemp, with the endorsement of Vice President Pence and President Trump, won the Republican primary. So, and one of the things he said during his campaign, he's going to use his own pickup truck to go around and pick up illegal aliens that won him a lot of support.
To get them out of the country.
To get them out of the country.
Right.
All right. So conservatives really love him in that state for that reason. But he is going to be facing the Democrat, Stacey Abrams, a female black woman. So
A female
black lady. So you're going to have a very interesting race. Georgia, since what, the 1700s, has had white males as governors. And so the so-called progressives, liberals, are putting forward Stacey Abrams as being the alternative, as being the new Georgia.
Time for a woman.
Time for a woman. And she reflects what they say is the new Georgia.
He's got to take his pickup around Georgia, picking up. What is he, stopping at the town square? And
I guess where they congregate
just
for work.
Ask illegal aliens to load up. How does this work exactly?
Then you head for the border.
Then you head for the
border. Y'all got enough room back there? Yeah. We're going to Mexico now. You're going to have to buckle up.
So you've got a political contrast in this race for governor in Georgia.
Yeah,
that will be interesting because it'll be basically Atlanta, which is the center of progressivism, probably
in Georgia,
and then the rest of Georgia.
Yep. See what happens.
Yeah.
You know how many people live in Atlanta now?
I don't.
Or the greater Atlanta area? It's like 6 million or something like that.
Really?
Oh, it's huge.
Dude,
you know how many people live in our state?
Three million. Yeah.
In Mississippi, 3 million people. In Atlanta, Metro Atlanta, 6 million people.
And if you don't believe that,
drive to
the Atlanta airport at 4 in the afternoon.
Almost, you cross the Alabama line, you're starting to get into Atlanta. Getting crazy. City sprawling is a problem. We shall return momentarily with more of today's issues. Abraham Hamilton III will be with us momentarily. Stay with us.
On the next Today's Issues, our guest will be Dr. Alex McFarland of Exploring the Word.
So Paul and Silas get imprisoned, and they're in jail. And what are they doing in jail? Are they angry? Are they, mad at God? No, they're singing praise songs.
We'll also have news headlines and analysis from American Family News reporters. Don't miss the next Today's Issues, weekday mornings at 11 Eastern, 10 Central on American Family Radio and on Facebook.
Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of American Family Association and American Family Radio. You know, I'm reading through the Old Testament now, and I'm coming to places that are named that I see on our Israel tour every March. It's really fascinating to think that Jericho existed way back in the Old Testament, thousands of years ago, and I can visit there today. The same can be said for Jerusalem. The Bible literally comes to life when you visit Israel, the Holy Land. Now, we're going in March. My wife, Allison, and I, we lead these tours every March. So if you would like to go with us, you need to go to the website and check it out. It's twholyland.com, twholyland.com. If you want a brochure sent to your mailbox, just call us at 800-FAMILIES, option 5. That's 800-FAMILIES, option 5, and we'll send you a brochure.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next. Since 1971, Liberty University's values have been defined by a commitment to excellence and a biblical worldview. Their mission of training champions for Christ has remained the foundation of everything they do. It's that mission that propels Liberty students to excellence in the classroom and beyond. More than 550 programs of study from undergrad to doctoral degrees, effectively preparing students to enter a competitive job market. Visit liberty.edu to learn more. That's liberty.edu. It will soon be illegal to slurp your Slurpee or sip your tea through a plastic straw in San Francisco. The Board of Supervisors passed the first reading of an ordinance that would ban restaurants, bars, and retailers from providing customers with plastic items, and that includes straws. One lawmaker told the San Francisco Chronicle the proposed law is about changing people's behavior, suggesting people really don't need to drink a glass of water with a straw. The Board of Supervisors says the number of plastic straws ending up in the landfill was staggering. Meanwhile, San Francisco is spending tens of millions of dollars clearing used needles and human waste from sidewalks, and yet city leaders have not introduced any legislation to address the drug epidemic. Maybe that's because they're more concerned about citizens stepping on plastic straws instead of dirty needles. I'm Todd Starnes.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
Are you? No switch? Welcome back to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Today's Issues is the name of this show on American Family Radio. Thank you for listening to AFR. How many radio stations we have, Walker?
183.
Well, we had 184. Did we lose one?
We sold one.
We did sell one?
We did.
You didn't know about it?
I do know about it, but we better not mention which one was sold, because then people will call in and say, you sold my radio station?
That's assuming they're listening to the non-existent radio station.
Duly noted, Walker. That was very good. I didn't understand it all.
He's wearing the polo shirt.
I just know if it was vice versa, you would have called me out on it.
Yeah, that's so true. I said was ridiculous, because how can you listen to a non-existent radio station and call in to complain, right?
Right.
Right.
But I get your point.
If you have the app.
We don't sell.
That's true.
We don't sell radio stations often at all. No, right. Rarely. If we do some, but rarely. Because only if they're getting zero support do we have to sell them. So 183 radio stations American Family Radio owns and operates across the fruited plain. Fred Jackson here from OneNewsNow.com and American Family Radio News. I'm Tim Wildman.
Ed Vitagliano and Walker Wildman. As always, we appreciate you listening to this show. You can check us out on Facebook. You can watch the show there live if you'd like to. Facebook, just type in Today's Issues, and Walker is posting the stories that we've been discussing here on this program. Abraham Hamilton III joins us most Wednesdays this time of day. And Abe is host of the Hamilton Corner each afternoon, 5 to 6 o'clock Central Time, right here on this station, American Family Radio. Abe also serves as a public policy analyst for American Family Association. Good morning, Abe.
Good morning.
So, Ed, set your question up for Abe.
All right, the question is, in the first half hour, first segment, we were talking about Michael Cohen.
Mm-hmm.
Recording without his client's knowledge, his client being then candidate Donald Trump, recording conversations with him, I guess because he wanted to perhaps protect himself in the future, whatever his reason. So my question is, however this plays out, is Michael Cohen going to be able to be a lawyer again, or will he be disbarred for doing this?
I think it depends on how the recordings come to light. So if the question is, did Michael Cohen turn over the recordings, or was it a part of the FBI's raid to where they recovered those recordings when they raided his offices? If it turns out Michael Cohen turned over the recordings, he has a huge problem with the New York State Bar, and as well as I don't think any other bar in the country would admit him, because the rules for attorney-client privilege are pretty stout in that actions that have taken place in the past are almost pretty much 100% protected by attorney-client privilege. Things, even future incidences, I mean, a hypothetical, if you have some information about something that could happen in the future, that would also be protected by the attorney-client privilege. The only very narrow exception is if there's an ongoing criminal episode. And from my vantage point, there could be no ongoing criminal episode to support Michael Cohen disclosing those recordings on his own. People may argue that President Trump was potentially using campaign funds, but from what I understand, that the payoff to the McDougal lady came from the tabloid owner. It didn't come from Trump directly. So if that is the case, there would be no basis for disclosing that information. Only potential thing I could see is if that there was President Trump using campaign finances to maybe reimburse the tabloid. But to date, there's been no evidence of that. Yeah. It's only been conversation about payoffs versus cash or check.
Right. Who authorized? You know, I don't know that I know it's happened probably, but I've never heard of, was it the FBI?
Yes.
Okay, so the FBI, what was it, 6-8 months ago, whenever it was, they go into Michael Cohen's law offices and shut it down, basically, right?
Yes.
Well, because they were investigating Michael Cohen for tax fraud, is that right?
Well,
there's dispute. Okay. Some say it was over Stormy Daniels payment.
Yes. Okay. So we don't really know. But, I mean, at least allegedly the FBI were targeting Michael Cohen for some kind of financial misdealings.
Yeah.
We all suspect it is to get to Trump.
Yes.
Right.
So.
That's my point. This is, you got two things going on here. First of all, basically, you got the FBI. They better be right, because they have ruined this man's, Michael Cohen, his actions here, taping Donald Trump notwithstanding. They've ruined his business.
Yes.
And his reputation and his life, livelihood. Am I right?
Yes.
By FBI. By just raiding.
How he recovers from this.
Huh?
Yeah.
I don't see how he recovers from this.
And they've seized all of his documents.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you go in to an attorney's office and seize all his documents, all his files, from everything, I guess.
Even other clients.
That he's done.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I'm just saying, that sounds like to me, Abe, that they're targeting President Trump. It sounds like to me the FBI, whoever's doing this, is trying to get, doing everything they can to try to get some dirt that's perhaps criminal on Donald Trump. Because, and I was shocked when I say shocked in quotations, no, very few liberals, Alan Dershowitz, to his credit, was about the only one who said, this is stunning that you can raid a lawyer's offices, violate the client...
Attorney-client privilege.
Client privilege, and liberals and ACLU are screaming about it.
To give an example from not too distant past, it would be the equivalent of the FBI raiding Johnny Cochran's office in the process of investigating O.J. Simpson.
That's a good point. Right.
That never would have happened. Hmm. And the silence from liberals and those right. who historically would have been stalwart defenders of the attorney-client privilege, they were conspicuously silent, which was almost as egregious as the FBI right. going in the first place, just to let people know that our entire adversarial system of justice exists to allow people who are charged with the crime to have the full benefit of the Bill of Rights, the Fifth Amendment, the Fourth Amendment, all of these things, which are traditionally held in high regard. Well, now that Trump is on the table, all of that is thrown out of the window because you cannot tell me that Michael Cohen is an important enough target for that to happen.
All right, so we're believing that the FBI took this recorded conversation as part of that raid, right?
Yes.
That's what we're believing.
What we heard earlier in our program?
Yes. Yeah.
These recordings were at his office, Michael Cohen.
About whether to pay off this woman or this...
Yes, but we're saying the FBI took that tape, all right?
Yes, when they confiscated
it. So how did Lanny Davis get a copy of this tape to give to CNN yesterday?
Well,
Lanny Davis is now the lawyer for Michael Cohen.
Well, Lanny Davis is Cohen's attorney, right?
Right. Yes. Right.
So the way that it happens, that in the discovery process,
right.
as a defense attorney, I would demand any evidence that you have against my client. So they would have to give copies of it to Lanny Davis in the course of his representation of Michael Cohen. But the question I have is, how would the FBI know it exists? And did Michael Cohen give the FBI the wink and the nod to say, hey, if you look in the bottom drawer to the right,
you may find
some candy.
That's what I think. I think they came to Cohen, they said, we're investigating you on X, Y, and Z, but if you help us out with anything you might have on the president, we might give you immunity or drop these charges or whatever. So what have you got? And Cohen's scrambling. He says, hey, listen, I have recordings. If you raid the office, you'll be able to find this material, like you said, bottom right-hand drawer.
So the worst we got here, and don't misunderstand us, folks, we are a Christian radio network, and marital fidelity is important.
Right.
And if President Trump, and it appears he did, cheated on his wife or wives, that's immoral, that's wrong, that's sinful, and you pay the consequences for that. We understand all that. That's an element that very few others will talk about today, but because we do believe in the Bible and what it teaches about, you know, being faithful to your spouse. However, that being said, is the quote worst we got here from Michael Cohen is, hey, yeah, you can learn how we paid off a couple women that President Trump, then candidate Trump, had affairs with. You can go down to my desk and look in that far, you know, look in the back here. I got a couple tapes that'll confirm that he cheated on his wife.
Well, but to Fred's point,
is that what we got? Is that the worst we got here?
It may be in relation to Michael Cohen, but to Fred's point, because I hadn't thought about this. So what Michael Cohen, at least his part in this recording of what Donald Trump was saying relative to the accusation about him committing adultery and the payoff, whatever, that should have nothing to do with Michael Cohen being charged with something. So why would Lanny Davis have access to it? Because that's not related to any charges they might have against Michael Cohen. It seems to me this is potentially damaging to Trump. That's why Lanny Davis has it, and that's right. why it's out in the public.
Yes, and I would agree with that. And again, they'll use those legal rules, discovery, and all that kind of stuff to get copies right. of it. But I think it's clear the ultimate objective is to be damaging to Trump. And then the question, again, comes back to, for me, is Lanny Davis releasing this with Michael Cohen's agreement? Or did he do it to his objection? Because that will have implications for Michael Cohen in his standing with the bar in New York. And it appears that he may have been complicit
well,
in that.
Well, Michael Cohen hasn't protested the release. We're almost 24 hours.
Yeah.
I haven't seen anything in any print saying
President
Michael Cohen.
Trump picked a bad lawyer. Huh?
Yeah. Well, have you ever heard of a lawyer clandestinely recording a client's conversation?
No, I have not. That is pretty...
Well, one of the defenses of Cohen doing this that I've read is, well, it's the same thing as taking notes when you have a meeting with a client, but this guarantees you get everything exactly right. But if I'm talking to my lawyer, I see him taking notes. I understand that. So if that's the way he does business, Michael Cohen should have told Donald Trump, rather than sit there and take notes, I record the conversation. I have my secretary type up the transcripts, and that's how I have notes. But he didn't tell Trump that.
No, in fact, Donald Trump, president, tweeted this morning, what kind of lawyer would tape a client?
Yes. Right. Yeah.
So he didn't know he was being taped.
He didn't know.
And I got another thing to tell you. There was a gentleman on last night with, I think it was Sean Hannity. And he made this point. He said, Michael Cohen better hope that Donald Trump wasn't in Florida on this.
When he's taping him.
Because in New York, the state of New York, you can tape a conversation if only one party knows about it.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But if he in Florida, it requires two.
And if it's in Florida, then he could be guilty of a crime.
Mm-hmm. Who could?
That's a felony.
Who's he?
Michael Cohen.
Yes.
I'm talking about.
Yeah. So President Trump didn't know anything about being taped. If you believe, he says, what kind of lawyer would tape a client? So sad. He says, Is this a first? Never heard of it before. I guess, a lawyer taping his client without his knowledge.
Yeah, I've never heard of that before.
The worst thing about all of this is that you have the top law enforcement agency in the country stacked against President Trump in an unfair manner,
going after him
because they don't like that he won the election. And you have Rod Rosenstein signing off on the FBI raid of an attorney's office. And then he goes before Congress and defends it as if he's, you know.
You know, I could understand, maybe, Abe, if this was narrow, that the Attorney General would say, or the FBI would say, we want information from you, Mr. Cohen, as it relates to so-and-so.
Mm-hmm.
No, they busted up, as they say, busted up all in there, right?
Yeah.
In his offices and basically shut him down. Yep. Is that what happened?
Well, the Trump team has given over 1 million documents to the special counsel.
Voluntarily,
there's no sign that they're withholding information or they're hiding it or smashing computers out back like Hillary Clinton did. They turned over everything requested and more.
Better be glad I'm not in charge. I'd be a dictator. I'd be firing them all.
And this is why. Yeah. This is another
go ahead.
Evidence, in my estimation, that this entire brouhaha is not criminal. It's political. Because if this was something that would be used in the criminal trial, they wouldn't be releasing it to the public now.
Right.
It is because they anticipate this is something that would not be admissible in court. They won't be able to use it in court. So the only benefit they'll be able to use it for is for political hodgepodge. And this is another indication, in my view, that the whole goal of this Mueller investigation, all of this stuff, is not for anything having to do with any criminal charges. It's solely for political
Jonathan
purposes.
Turley, the attorney and professor.
Liberal?
Liberal from George Washington Law
liberal
School.
Liberal, but fair.
Yeah, but liberal's fair. Like Dershowitz has also said he's very concerned about the politicization and weaponization
of the FBI and the Justice Department.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Jeff Sessions, when is he going to be heard from?
He's MIA.
Who?
Yeah.
I know. You know, I wish he'd never left the Senate now. Because he would have been better as a senator than he is as attorney general. Although, if you talk to Sandy Rios, she says he's doing a lot of good stuff, just not on this front.
Right.
That we're talking about. Because he,
recused himself.
Right.
Recused himself. All right, Abe, what are you going to be talking about this afternoon, I wonder?
Well, I had Judge Jeanine Pirro lined up, but I'm hearing that we're rescheduling her interview. So I may delve into this stuff a little bit more.
Okay. Such a wallflower, Judge Jeanine.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
And she's—I didn't know. I thought I was listening to Sandy Rios, and she described her as being like barely 5 foot tall. So she's like one of these shorter ladies who's a firebrand.
Yeah,
you know.
All right, thank you, Abe. You're listening to the radio program Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Dr. Robert Jeffress is heard each morning here on American Family Radio with the Bible teaching show Pathway to Victory. Robert is the senior pastor of the First Baptist Church Dallas, which is one of the more historic churches in America, certainly in the Southern Baptist denomination, and they are about to celebrate a big anniversary. And joining us to talk about it is Dr. Jeffress. Robert, good morning to you.
Good morning, Tim. Good to be with you.
You in Dallas today or traveling?
I am here, getting ready to conduct a funeral in a little bit.
By the way, how many times a week do you appear on Fox News? I see you a lot. Two or three times?
It just depends on what the news cycle is.
Okay.
Sometimes it's two or three, sometimes it's none. It just depends what's happening.
Hey, if you got to go bury somebody, we understand.
It'll keep for a while.
Well, I don't know how to take that exactly. But anyway, tell us about the church.
Well, we are really excited. This coming Sunday, we are celebrating the 150th anniversary of First Baptist Dallas. We began in 1868. Interestingly, the church has always been in the heart of downtown Dallas. And, I guess what is unique about our church is, most mega churches have now fled downtown areas and gone to the suburbs. I think we're one of the only, maybe the only, growing megachurch still left in the downtown area. And so we believe that's where God wants us. And I think the longevity of our church, we're not just surviving but continue to grow, is built on the fact that we're not built on a denomination or on tradition. Our church has solidly been built on the Bible. And that's what we're going to be talking about this Sunday. Governor Greg Abbott, our great governor from Texas, is going to be here to help us celebrate, and it's going to be a great day.
Dr. Jeffress, Fred Jackson here. I was reading a little bit of the profile of the church there. There haven't been too many pastors over the last 150 years of First Baptist Dallas.
It's interesting. In a 100-year period, our church had just two pastors, George W. Truett and W. A. Criswell, and so there are some that have come and gone quicker than others. But it's really I'm the third longest tenured pastor after Criswell and Truett, but I've got a long ways to go to catch up to 50 years.
Can people come who are listening to us? We have a lot of listeners in the Greenville, Dallas area. I know an outside who traveled through Dallas and worship.
Yes.
Can they come Sunday? You're going to have a seat for them?
They can come Sunday, and for those maybe outside the Metroplex who'd love to tune in, we invite them to use our First Dallas iCampus, our internet campus. They can go to firstdallas.org and see the service live beginning at 11 Central Time.
And one other question. I know that you are friends with President Trump. We've talked about him this hour. How would you grade him out? I know this is a big, broad, general question, but how would you grade him out in terms of the expectations that we had as Christians who went to the polls and voted for him?
Interestingly, he asked me that question not long ago.
He did? Said,
Okay. And he said, what do evangelicals think about me now? And I said, and I believe this, I said, you've not only met, but you've exceeded our expectations. He said, well, what do they like most about what I've done? And I said, without a doubt, it's the conservative judicial picks, not just at the Supreme Court level, but at the federal level.
Right.
That's the most important issue that drove evangelicals to support this unconventional candidate, and it's what's, I think, keeping his support at that record 77% level. So in spite of all of the noise, Michael Cohen, Stormy Daniels, he's delivering on the promise that means the most to us and that we think will have the most lasting impact, at least politically, on our country. And, I said Friday night on Shannon Ring's show, we're not looking to Washington, D.C. to bring spiritual revival to America. That's the job of Jesus Christ and his church. What we want Washington to do is to protect our security and leave us alone to practice our faith. That's the requirements of government in 1 Timothy 2. I think President Trump is excelling on both those counts.
Robert, thanks so much for your time, and we look forward to visiting with you again sometime soon.
Thanks, Tim.
Okay. That's Dr. Robert Jeffress. It's not Jeffers, people. It's not Jeffers. Quit calling him Dr. Jeffers. Huh?
Jeffress.
It's Jeffress. Did I sound like I was scolding our listeners? Not all of them, just the one who called him Jeffers. But anyway, his name is Dr. Robert Jeffress. And they are celebrating the 150th anniversary of the First Baptist Church, Dallas. Have you ever been there, Fred?
I have not. I listened to his program, though, Pathway to Victory, which basically are his sermons.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And I'll tell you what, he's not shy. He'll mix it up. He believes, one of the things he believes, I've heard him say this, is that every sermon should be made relevant to where we are in our history of mankind right now. So he's not afraid to talk about what's going on in the United States right now. He's not afraid to say why, from the pulpit, why he has supported President Trump from the get-go. He takes a lot of flack.
I'm sure he does.
Even from inside his own denomination, the Southern Baptists. He takes some flack for that. But, you know, he has, just as he was outlining there, we're not electing a pastor of the nation.
Right.
We're electing a politician whose job it is the security of the nation, number one. That's what's the major concern. Why? And he believed, and also the judicial nominees, that was one of the reasons. And he has not backed away from this.
Right.
Yeah, and Robert knows this. We've talked here. I was critical of him backing Donald Trump in the primary.
Mm. Right.
He came to Tupelo and visited with us, and, you know.
He was on the air. He was on Today's Issue.
Yeah, today. And I had a problem with that. But he thought, Robert thought, that Donald Trump was the only one who had a chance to beat Hillary Clinton. Mm-hmm. And so his view was, what good is it if we're going to support somebody if they have no chance to beat her? Mm-hmm. Okay. And he thought Donald Trump could attract independent voters like no other Republican.
Right.
And in hindsight, I think he was right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think Robert so was right. Now, it was still okay for me to beat him up because I was holier than him on this issue. And no, I'm just kidding.
Plus, he didn't have a polo shirt. So
he didn't have a polo shirt.
Exactly.
But I think Robert also was able to influence President Trump. Mm-hmm. And that's why President Trump still seeks Robert's advice today and counsel today and ask him, what is your opinion on such and such? And so Robert has President Trump's ear. That doesn't mean he always does what Robert would like to see him do. But I think it's a good thing that Dr. Jeffress can talk to Donald Trump in a frank way. And I want our voice as Christians to be heard at the government's highest levels.
Right.
I think that's a positive thing. So I'm glad that Robert had this relationship with Donald Trump. And I think he was more right than wrong to handle it the way he did. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and I agree. I think looking back,
right.
I don't know of a single one of those other
candidates.
16 candidates. Remember the first 17, Republican candidates. I can't think of a single one of them. Although several of them probably were closer to my particular view of life and politics and government. I don't think I can't think of a single one of those that probably would have beaten Hillary Clinton. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. They could have won in Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin.
Right.
Those three states in particular.
And
Ohio.
I can't think of one of them other than Donald Trump that would do all of this that he said he would do.
That's right.
That's a very good point, Walker.
And I don't know one candidate. Even I love Ted Cruz and I love Rand Paul and others, but I don't know any of them that would sit across the seat at NATO and tell them that they're not paying enough.
Yeah.
I agree with you. President Trump, because he doesn't care.
That's right.
Right.
Because he doesn't care he does care, but because he's a fighter and he's going to do what he thinks is in the best interest of the country, he's going to make some decisions, some tough decisions that need to be made. We shall return momentarily. Thank you, Fred.
You're welcome.
We'll be back in 5 minutes with more of today's issues. 5 minutes, we'll be right back.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.